I want to talk to you today about this question: where can I go to have peace? So take a deep breath. Be aware of all the little peace robbers in your world. Where can I go? I remember reading years ago a survey of folks that asked, "What's your favorite room in the house?" And as you might guess, I think the number one for a lot of people was the kitchen. Right behind that, for many, many people, was the bedroom. Do you want to guess what was the number one favorite room for moms of young children? That's correct. It was the bathroom. Why? Because I can go in there and lock the door and keep those little rugrats out. I have a friend who's got a little child that just became mobile, and he said he's entered into a Stitch phase. If you're a parent of little kids and you know Lilo and Stitch, and like just mobile chaos once that child can locomote themselves. So that place might be temporarily is the room where you can go in and lock everybody else out and be there all by yourself. What a sad thing to be where, like a bathroom for crying out loud, is the one place where you can get peace and quiet. We're learning together how to live with an untroubled heart in a troubled world from our friend Jesus. I think about this wonderful line from Psalm 138, where the psalmist says, "Though I walk in the midst of trouble, you preserve my life." It's a troubled world, and I walk, and you might think about your troubles right now, and yet God is preserving your life. And the idea is not just he's keeping you from biologically dying, but your aliveness, your spirit, your vitality, your connection to meaning and love, God is involved in caring for, watching over, preserving. And that's why Jesus makes this remarkable statement that I wanted to go a bit deeper into today in John chapter 14. He says to his disciples in verse 27, just in the middle of all these other comments, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives, I give to you." And I want to reflect for a moment on why is peace a gift? If peace is going to come to me, I cannot manufacture it. It is quite a different thing than contemporary therapeutic attempts at mindlessness, although those are real good things and those can be used by God and they can help me become present to the presence, in the presence. But peace, if it is to come, will come as a gift. It must come from beyond us. So I want to invite you right now, as we're talking through these matters, to take a moment and ask Jesus for the gift of peace, for the gift of his peace. And I'll say a bit more about why peace must come as a gift. And what does it mean if I ask to be given that gift? Because there's a cost to it, even though it's a free gift. And it's not simply the same thing as I don't like feelings of anxiety or worry or being conflicted internally, and I would like freedom from all of that. It is more than just experiencing Zen comfort. I have been reading Michael Vorenberg's book, Lincoln's Peace. And very interesting start to this book. What triggers it is kind of a search to discover when exactly did the Civil War end? And as you may know, the famous moment that people look back on is when Robert E. Lee surrendered to Ulysses Grant at Appomattox. I think it was April 8th or so, 1865. But there were other armies that were still in the field. And so Sherman had not yet received the surrender from Joseph Johnson. And then the other surrenders took place later. The next president, Andrew Johnson, actually located the date in a different spot. There's a series of dates that were assigned the ending of the Civil War. And so this book has as its kind of framework a search for when did the war actually end. But part of what Vorenberg writes is that I realized I had the assumption that all wars end. But do they? And he notes that there was ambiguity about that even back in the days of the Civil War. U.S. Attorney James Speed wrote We are in the habit of saying and thinking that war is the abnormal and peace the normal condition of a nation, Speed wrote to a friend. Is that true? He now asked. Does history so teach? Ambrose Bierce, the author and satirist and Civil War veteran, mocked the very idea that time could be divided into war and peace. Peace, Bierce wrote, was merely a period of cheating between two periods of fighting. Vornberg writes, kind of a haunting sentence. The unbearable knowledge that some wars never end. The undying hope that all wars must end. Such is the paradoxical place we inhabit as we stumble into the second quarter of the 21st century. And as we think about this now, we think about not just our own lives, not just what was happening back there back then, but people in Gaza, people in Ukraine, people in the Sudan, people all over the place. I was writing back and forth with my pal Sam about this, and one of the things that Sam said is, war never ends because greed never ends. Peace, if it is going to come, must come as a gift from beyond us. War never ends because greed never ends. In Vornberg's book, he quotes a remarkable speech by Richard Henry Dana. Dana had been a sailor. He became famous when he wrote Years Before the Civil War, 2 years before the mast. And after Appomattox, he gave a speech, gave a couple of them that became quite famous. But here's what he says, and this is so striking. In such a war as this, peace cannot be made. It must come. It must come as fair weather comes after a tempest. It must come as public health comes after the plague. And the idea, part of what he's getting to, it's more complicated than this, but part of it is that the Civil War was fought over the issue of slavery, and at the core of that was the notion that blacks were not deeply human and that the end that must be fought over is their full and equal treatment and participation in society, freedom from slavery, and so on. So that even if two armies stopped shooting bullets at each other, it didn't mean there was peace because the end had not yet been achieved. But how can that be achieved? And of course, it was not at Appomattox. It requires a change in the human heart. And if that change in the human heart does not take place, if the world is still divided in enough hearts in between us versus them, and we should be over them, and there is no obligation on me to genuinely love, to see the image of God, to recognize the love and the sacrificial death of Jesus on the cross for the sake of that other, who, then peace will be forever elusive. Peace cannot be made. Human beings are not able to make peace. It must come. So now I ask, Jesus, would you give me the gift of peace? But then I must recognize that I'm not just asking for comfort, not just for freedom from fear, worry, and anxiety. James, Jesus' brother, writes, I think it's in James 3, poses that question. Why is there a lack of peace? Why are there quarrels and divisions among you? Is it not because there is a battle between your desires, because of your desires, the desires that rage within every one of us and the between every one of us? That's the battle. That's the war. That's where peace must come. So this is from Francis Fenelon, where he talks about how peace comes. Live in continued peace. Now, we have peace with God because of what Jesus did. We have peace with God, peace with our own conscience. Peace even in the midst of our deep failures and guilt, blameworthiness. We have peace with God because of what God has done through Jesus, through his life and his teaching and his death on the cross and his forgiveness of us. But understand that peace does not depend upon the fervor of your devotion. The only thing you need to be concerned about is the direction of your will. Give up to God give that up that is my will to God without reservation. The important question when it comes to peace is not how religious you are or how devoted you are, but rather, is your will in harmony with God's? Why do we not have peace? Well, it's all these desires that rage that battle within me. Humbly confess your faults. If you want peace today, find another person and confess your faults to him. Learn to be detached from the world and completely abandoned to God. God, I do not demand to have this outcome, to have this amount of money. A friend of mine, Rick Seaman, years ago made a really brilliant observation. He said, John, as you're working with folks as a pastor and talking about money, don't tell them to try to achieve financial security. Tell them to ask God for freedom from financial insecurity. We think that peace will come when we engineer something like financial security. There ain't enough money in the world to give you financial security. Jesus told a story about a rather rich fool who thought that he'd achieve financial security, but that night his life was required of him. What I can ask is, God, would you keep me from being tormented by a sense of financial insecurity? Having enough money will never make me secure. That's why there's no such thing as financial security. But I can ask God, would you make me wise? Would you free me from that greed that torments me? Would you help me learn to trust you and to do your will from one moment to the next in my work life and my financial life, and so that I might live in the security of you and know that kind of peace? Learn to be detached from the world, completely abandoned to God. Love him more than yourself and his glory more than your life. The least you can do is desire and ask God for such a love. God will then pour out upon you that special love which only his children can know. And he will give you peace. And Paul says, the peace of God will guard your hearts and minds. The peace of God. Peace cannot be made. Peace can only come. It comes as a gift. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Don't let your heart be troubled.
Hey, I'm Tim. I'm part of the team here at Become New. If you enjoyed that teaching from John, be sure to hit subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes from him. Right now, we're doing a little PS on the series Untroubled Heart that we concluded 2 weeks ago. But there were some things John wanted to mention that didn't make it in any episodes, and so we just decided to do a few extra. So that's what we're doing now. If you recall, at the beginning of Untroubled Heart, we issued a pre-series peace survey to gauge the peace of your heart, and over 1,000 of you participated in that, so thank you. Now we're issuing a post-series survey, and that will just help us learn and grow as a team to measure the impact of these teachings. So you can find the link to participate in that survey in the show notes below. We'd sure appreciate it. Also, I mean it when I say that there is a group of us who meet every weekday for 1 hour to pray for you and for any viewer who sends in a prayer request. So if you've got a burden or a prayer request, you don't have to bear it alone. We would love to pray for you. You can text it to us at the number 855-888-0444 or email it to us at connect@becomenew.com. You can also check out our website, becomenew.com, to find more resources like the email and other things that you might find interesting. Thanks for joining us. Remember that the most important thing about your life is the person you become. We'll see you next time.